Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
What a time. It's Shayna Live, and it is Sabres Live, and it's conference final time, and there was a trade in the NHL yesterday, and it's just amazing. Shayna, you're early this week. We're blessed. Thank you. Why or why not? That's the game I'm going to start with you,
okay.
The conference finals. So we'll start with Florida against the Rangers. Why might they win? Why not?
Okay, Florida will win because they're going to expose the Rangers' defense. They have a lot of star power staggered through three lines in a way that few teams can contain. So with Jacob Trouba stepping up to play matchup minutes so the Rangers can avoid having a third pair, that's a total disaster like it was against Carolina. It leaves two openings. Someone's going to have to take on Tkachuk and someone's going to have to take on Barkov. So that's going to clear their way through. They are not going to advance because Igor Shesterkin is Igor Shesterkin, and he's going to outplay playoff Bob, who, while he earned the name last postseason, I think is being overhyped this year.
Okay. Bob is... look, the
overhyped Bob. Wow.
The eye test he's is good. The eye test is good with Bob. The numbers, when it comes to basic numbers especially, is just average, right? A 902.
Playoff Bob to me is Conn Smythe caliber, right? Like last year. He set himself a high bar. He just isn't meeting it. He's not bad, but he's not as good.
Is special teams a reason why or why not the Rangers will win? Because that's what they've done all year. And Florida takes a lot of penalties, although they've been better in the playoffs, especially in the second round. But their identity is to take a lot of penalties.
Yeah. So special teams are going to be really interesting here because if you go by 5-on-5, Florida has a clear advantage, right? None of us have any doubts about that. But special teams is where it gets a little bit closer. You look at the Panthers' power play in the regular season, they score fewer goals than expected. And in the playoffs, it's the opposite, right? And that's kind of always been the case with Florida. Those shooting percentages rebound, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But on the power play, they have a lot of weapons. The Rangers' penalty kill has been excellent. So that's going to be a really tight matchup, like we expected it to be versus Carolina. And then on the flip side of it, the Rangers' power play is elite. We all know that. They have all the shooting talent. They have, you know, dynamic players. They've been roving around and swapping positions out as power plays go on, and it works for them. And the penalty kill has been outstanding. So it's a really interesting one because if the Rangers' penalty kill is playing like it was last series, I think that that's a huge advantage for them because I think sometimes you can gain more momentum from a good penalty kill. And the fact that they're even in goals while shorthanded with 4-4, that's really impressive. So it can definitely tilt the series, but it's always interesting to see how special teams evolve as the playoffs go on, because that's the area of the game you can scout the easiest, right? 5-on-5 play, you might be scouting 40 minutes a game. Power play might be 6 minutes a game. It's only 10 players tops generally who play power play in two different formations that you can try to scout, learn, and adjust to, like we saw the Canes do in round two. So that's always going to be an interesting one if they stay as effective throughout the entire series.
Yeah, right now, I mean, obviously a little bit more of an edge for the Rangers power play compared to Florida, but the penalty kill both rank in the top three. And as much as, you know, Marty was right in saying how Florida has earned a lot of practice time throughout the course of the year on the penalty kill, they've also been very good. So I agree, Shayna. I think it'll be fascinating to watch the matchup, the pre-scout, and just how they can, if possible, negate. So I get the sense already that you have the edge for the Rangers in goal with Shesterkin over Bobrovsky. Gus Forsling has done everything imaginable to just keep earning every next step in his career. He's a fascinating story. He really is. And he had a pronounced impact in the last round. What about Brandon Montour? Because I feel like Montour was the previous year's story with his breakout year. But the fact of the matter is Brandon's future outlook is still less firm contractually than what Forsling is now with his extension. So like, I think the long way of saying it is like, what more does Brandon Montour have to gain here with another good round and another good round, you know, heading into the summer?
Yeah, I think the Panthers did the right thing starting with Forsling, because if you look at that top pair, we all know Ekblad, he's the name recognition. But to me, Uyghur was the slightly better of the two. You lose him, Forsling steps up in the role, right? And he's been thriving. He's the driver of that pair in such a quietly effective way. And it's hard because we don't know how to value defense. So sometimes it doesn't always jump out. I think he has proven himself and deserves that contract first. Not to say that Montour doesn't deserve it. I think they handle Reinhardt and then circle back here. But the fact that Forsling's playing the way that he is with Ekblad, right, and carrying the weight on that pair, and they can take on top competition, frees up Montour's pair with Mikkel a little bit more, so he can kind of just wheel offensively, which is the height of his power. And we saw that last year. And it's tough because when he came back into the fold this season after that injury, he wasn't scoring as much to start. He was really good below the surface, but the numbers didn't pop. And again, we don't know how to judge defense. We barely know how to analyze hockey without looking at points. And sometimes we get so caught on that and we think someone's slowing down. Mm-hmm. He's crushing it. He's absolutely crushing it this postseason. He shouldn't have more to prove. But I understand it in a sense that last year, he ran with the opportunity. And sometimes you need to see someone follow that up. And if you don't see it on the surface with the point totals, and missing games is going to set you back, and then not scoring to come back is going to set you further back. The playoffs is where you make a name for yourself. So in this series, their toughest task yet, right? Because Tampa Bay, we all expected them to walk all over. Boston was a lower scoring series at times, and that was just the way it was going. Here's going to be a team that's going to make you pay offensively in the Rangers because they're great at finishing their chances. I think this is the shot for Montour to step up and be like, I'm still that guy. And last year wasn't a fluke because he's doing everything and more. But I think sometimes people just need that more tangible impact to like grasp onto it.
He's still making $3.5 million, Marty.
I know, but he'll make more than that, obviously.
He's got to make like high eights after this, right?
Well, it's just funny on the heels of Zadorov being eliminated in Vancouver and what people were projecting there. And I get it. No two defensemen are the same. But like, whether he gets squeezed in Florida or not, I mean, they're going to have to squeeze on Reinhardt anyway. Like, Montour's got to be landing seven somewhere, right?
AFP Analytics duffer, buddy James and Roch, he has him at $7.7 million on a six-year contract. So six times 7.7, that's $46 million. And that's where he's going to be. Shayna, let me ask you this question then. If we were talking Montour and somebody else like Florida Rangers, is Lafreniere going to keep going? He's 10 points in 10 playoff games. Is he like the guy that can keep going, point a game and make a difference? Or is it just Panarin, Zibanejad, Trocheck, and Fox and the big guys?
No, I think he definitely has been one of the best players this postseason for the Rangers because I think Kreider and Zibanejad at 5-5 have had some concerns, but they come to play on the power play and in the big moments, you wipe it away, right? Panarin at times hasn't been as impactful, and you see some of the defensive struggles of that line. You look at a game like, I think it was game four, they separated that line, and Lafreniere was jumping up with Kreider and Zibanejad because he was the guy with the most jump in that entire game. So they were moving him around to just keep everybody else going. To me, Panarin's the driver of the line. Panarin's an elite player. He doesn't need good players around him to make him elite. But if you get someone that can keep up with him and compliment him, it makes him that much better. And that's exactly what Lafreniere's done all year. You look at, you know, at 5-on-5, some of their micro stats tracked by all three zones. In the top right quadrant of a chart to make it so much more digestible is Artemi Panarin with high danger shots. Shots that were set up by high danger passes and high danger shot assists. Right next to him is Alexis Lafreniere, which shows just how good he's been at 5-on-5 this year. He's really developed into a two-way threat. And then you tie it all together with Trocheck, who rates very well in both two. And you have three players who can do a little bit of everything. They just keep everyone going. That line, I think, is going to be super effective here.
Edmonton-Dallas starts tomorrow. Why or why not for the Edmonton Oilers?
Why will be Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid doing Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid-like things. I know it's an obvious answer, but guess what? When you're the Oilers, that is what your whole strategy is built on, right? And it's going to be interesting to see if they stack them or separate them because we saw them get stacked to start round two, and then we saw them get separated to end it, and that's the best case scenario for everyone because you spread the wealth a little bit, and Nugent Hopkins and Hyman can thrive with McDavid. I think it's the best top line he's ever played on besides time with Draisaitl, so you have something going here. If they win, it's because the two of them, not just they're doing it at 5-on-5, it's the power play. The power play separates these two teams so much. Yep. The Oilers' power play has been unreal this postseason after the last 2 years of being unreal in the regular season. They lose for one reason and one reason alone. Their back end. It is very, like, this series is going to be so interesting because I think we need to talk about Chris Tanev and who got him and who didn't get him, who chose to upgrade on defense.
And when they got him, quite frankly. I say this every year and I hate it.
Like, a week early.
It was more than that.
Was it a week and a half?
Oh, I think so. I think Tanev was much earlier than right before. I could be wrong on that, but because
I think it was like a week and a half, but still, that's early in NHL terms, right? Like, you could, if you're the Oilers and you see Colorado brings in Walker, Dallas brings in Tanev, Vegas brings in Hanifin, and Vancouver already made their move on defense, and you go, we're good. You have a problem. Because in round one and round two, we see Cody Ceci and Darnell Nurse get absolutely decimated. And if you split them up, now you just drag down two pairs instead of one, but you have to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. And then you go behind the defense and you go, here's Stuart Skinner. So there you go. It's like, it's, if you get down one layer, which you probably can, here's the next layer, and it's not very good. And it can easily undo everything and more that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl can do.
Yeah, the trade was 8 days before the trade deadline, or nine, depending on if it was at night, past midnight.
I bow to you again, Shayna.
It was in between.
It was Lindholm who was earlier, and then Zadorov who was super early, if I remember right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Monahan was early as well with Winnipeg, I believe. So, you know, there was some deals that happened early. And
got late early out there, Marty.
It got very late early, absolutely. Okay, so why did I pick Dallas in five? You know, I'm going to ask you because I feel like you could read my mind, Shayna. Why did I pick Dallas in five?
Probably the same reasons I did. They have a little bit of everything and more, right?
Did you pick Dallas them in five?
I have them in six.
Okay.
But to me, because I think the Oilers power play steals the game. I can see that, right? Like, okay, Dallas hasn't had it that easy this postseason. First of all, you go through Vegas and you get here. Good for you. You go through Colorado and you get here. The Edmonton Oilers would not scare me, you know? They are one of the best teams at defending the rush. They're a really good team at disrupting passes, which really nullifies the attack that the Oilers bring. Chris Tanev is playing lights out against Jack Eichel, then Nathan MacKinnon. Now he's going to have, you know, Connor McDavid. They split it up. You have Miro Heiskanen to take on Leon Draisaitl. That's huge right there. The scoring depth is crushing it. Jason Robertson is hitting that star caliber we needed to see. I don't think he was there at the beginning of the postseason. Now you have guys like, you know, Wyatt Johnson and Logan Stakhoven. You see the, you know, contributions from Duchesne and Marchman. They have it up and down their lineup. And now Jake Ottinger looks the best he has all year. No time like the present to pick up the pace. I thought he was excellent in that last series. So to me, I don't see how you can get past that if you're Edmonton.
Are you worried about Ropiens missing time, or does it matter?
I'm worried. I'm not the most worried because you know that you have a lot of guys who can jump up at center, right? They have all these different players you can play center or wing. So you have all these options for your lineup. It's not like, well, you have to do this and now you're crushed. So it definitely helps. But he's the guy that takes on top competition for the Stars. He has all year. He shouldered the majority of that burden. Do they have guys who can take it on otherwise? Sure. Do you want to bury them? Maybe not. So I'm concerned, but if he only misses game one or game two, I think it'll be okay.
We have less than hoped for time to discuss the fallout of yesterday's trade between Tampa and Nashville. From the Predators' perspective, with McDonough moving back to the Bolts, does this open the door for more money for UC Saros, or, in your mind, a bigger deal to help the rest of the roster?
You know what? I don't look at it as much as clearing cap space as I do just sticking with the process, right? This was a tidy bit of business here. That 2025 second, if Tampa Bay doesn't figure it out, is worth a lot more than those picks would have been, you know, before. You get him for nothing and then you trade him for more. That's always a good thing to do. And now you open the door to a young guy playing more. I think it means someone like Carrier is going to stay in Nashville because he's a UFA and that makes the most sense. I think you can pay Saros more, but I don't know what they do there. I think that they could wait till midseason and then figure it out. Okay. But to me, I think it's just them saying, like, we know what we're doing and our eyes are on the future. As good as this year was, we're not just getting blinded by that and saying, like, oh, we're fine when we're not. And I'm really intrigued by Barry Trotz. I think he's bringing a level of creativity I want to see from more general managers.
Does Steven Stamkos sign in Tampa, and does he sign for more than $6 million? He made $6.5 million last year. He had an $8.5 million cap hit. Is it the same, like, hey, six and a half hometown discount with Steven Stamkos?
And he's 34, right? He's going to sign when he's 34, so you can't do performance bonuses, which is a killer. I'm going to say 6.5. I could even see it being a one-year deal in a way so they can have the performance bonuses, but I would guess he gets like 3 years, right? Like, Kopitar got two, he gets three. I think he stays. I think bringing McDonough back signals like, hey, we're fixing this defense, which killed us this year, and we're going to be a better team next year, so you can't lose him now. Someone else has to go, though.
Yeah, who?
I would get rid of Chernak, personally. I wouldn't have signed that contract in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think based on how people perceive Chernak, I think he could be a good commodity for other teams. 100%.
Yeah, unless you think, hey, how's that contract going to age with his style of play, which I would not want to touch with the 10-foot pole.
Yeah. Well, interesting with Nashville. We haven't had a ton of time to talk about it. It's also not called Predators Live for a reason, but they have Askarov. You know, we talked a lot about Milwaukee this year and their 19-game winning streak, and they only survived the first round after he lost the first two games. The veteran Grosnick came in, won the next three. Now they're in the next round against Grand Rapids. They lost the first one. Guess who came back into the crease to get game two? And the series is in game three tonight. So it'll be worth watching again. Askarov's development, obviously, with Milwaukee. Shayna, thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Dana Goldman from The Athletic. We're back after this.